it's taking that moment to say, okay, how have I been contributing to this? And really taking ownership of it. You know, how am I plugged in to the old paradigm? And how am I continuing to like help perpetuate that into the future? And how instead can I take that different step forward rather than just continuing on in that same pattern? Hello, and welcome to the New Humans for New Earth podcast. I'm Queenie, your host. And on this podcast, we believe that every human alive today has a role to play in helping to co-create a new, more loving, and more aligned world. Here, we'll introduce you to wisdom, perspectives, and information to support and inspire you in making more aligned choices in your life. I spoke in the previous episode about the revolution that's happening right now. And I suggested that part of our mission as new humans, and perhaps even the core of our mission as new humans, is to opt out of supporting people, companies, and practices that prioritize profits over people and the planet. And instead to opt in to supporting people, businesses, and practices that will lead us into new earth. In fact, this is the whole premise of this podcast, that there are concrete, actionable things that you can do in your life right now to help co-create the kinder, more compassionate, more loving, and unified world we all know is possible in the deepest parts of our hearts. I said that there are seeds and threads of new earth growing right now, and that it is our job to help weave them together into a new whole. In today's episode, I want to really dive into this idea, to really sincerely ask, is there actually anything to do? Because so often in the larger spiritual conversation, when the question of what can I do is raised, the answer is just be love. And a variation on this response is, we're not human doers, we're human beings. And from one perspective, this answer says it all. But from another perspective, this type of answer is so unsatisfying. And it even seems to suggest that the question of what can I do is silly. Because, of course, there's nothing to do. And so why even concern yourself with the question of what I should be doing? Another variation of this response is, there's nothing to do because it's already done. Right? So the idea behind this response is, well, new earth is already manifested in the future. And time is nonlinear. So it's already manifested now. So there's nothing to do to get to New Earth. You just have to be in it, right? And for me, this just starts to feel too much like that deep sense of apathy that so many of us have been stuck in until recently. And it's one thing to say that you have deep faith in the coming of New Earth. And it's another thing to say that your spirituality, or if you, you know, don't believe in spirituality, but you have sort of this internal moral compass, right? That your spirituality has nothing to say about how you move through this world, right? And if your spirituality isn't informing how you show up in this world, then what is it even doing? Now today, we are so blessed to have one of my favorite new humans, one of my personal besties, and the only tattoo artist I will let touch my skin, joining us for this conversation. Please welcome to the New Humans for New Earth podcast, Gabe Torres.
Oh my God, what an introduction. How do you go from there? Where do you go from there? First of all, thank you for having me here.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and being my very first guest on this podcast.
Honored.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but actually, like, one of the very first times we ever hung out, we were like, oh my God, we have to do a podcast together.
You know, I do remember that. I don't remember the conversation, but I do remember saying, wow, like, every time we talk, we just sync.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love about you in particular and just our dynamic that, like, we can talk about everything from, like, reality TV to, like, meeting God, you know, and, like, everything in between. And it's, like, it's just incredible. I love it.
This is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just, you know, to start us off, I wanted to ask you, like, how do you think about your mission here as a new human? Do you have one? How do you conceive of it?
Wow. Way to start.
I know. No pressure.
My mission, you know, it's kind of unfolding as I go. Mm-hmm. I feel like my mission is shown to me in increments. Mm-hmm. I don't fully know the entire picture, but there's an inner trust that you get with your journey and seeing it unfold, where you get to know which direction you're going and how to honor it as you complete the last step or part of the mission, as you might say.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I can definitely relate to the mission, like, revealing itself as you go. I mean, I was just telling you earlier, like, I think some of the mission, like, revealed itself just yesterday, and I'm like, okay, is that what we're doing now? Like, all right, you know. but give us some context, like, or some content, if you, to the extent that you feel comfortable, right? Like, in this moment, in these times, how are you understanding what your personal mission is here?
Well, the core of it, or the road? Because the road feels like a game of Uno, where a card gets flipped and I either can use it with the deck that I have and continue, or it reverses me back and I have to relearn that step and then continue.
Mm. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Those moments where you're like, oh, I seem to have not learned something about this level, right? Yeah. Like, we seem to be going around in circles here. Yeah. But how do you conceive of, like, what is special to you about being a new human? What is that role? What is that responsibility? How do you think about that?
Well, responsibility is not really something that I don't see it as a responsibility. Mm. I see it as a gift to be able to play with whenever I have or want to. Mm-hmm. There was a moment I thought it was a responsibility, but the message was that I have the gift of this life. Mm. And if I choose and have time to be in the said journey for the collective, then only then would it be okay. But not to take away from my given gift of the experience of being human in this lifetime.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, I definitely have had an experience or continue to have experiences, right, where you're sort of presented with a choice, right? And this, we live in a free will environment, right? So it's always a matter of choice. And the question that I feel sort of confronted with in those moments is like, well, Queenie, like, do you accept the mission? Do you want to take this mission on, you know? And so there's no, it's not like slavery, right? It's almost like an honor, right?
Yes.
It's not responsibility. Maybe responsibility was the wrong word. It's like the honor of being a new human in this world, in this time.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, it gets kind of gray. Mm. Because, I mean, at least for me, because the honor and the sense of the journey is always constant. Mm. There is, right now, there seems to be this shift that has to be made. Mm-hmm. And it's up to all of us to nudge it, right, in the right yes. direction. But it's really easy to fall into a place where you can feel like you're the person that has to nudge a bigger portion than maybe your neighbor or take on more than what you would traditionally if you didn't have anything else in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd say for me personally, I check in with all of my human things first.
Sure.
If I spent enough time with my family, mm-hmm. if I've spent enough time with my friends, if I'd enjoyed, you know, a portion of my life, or I feel like I need to fulfill something within myself. And all of those things kind of play a role. Not that they need to always be present when I make the choice or mm-hmm. not make the choice to continue on what the projected journey looks like,
mm-hmm.
but definitely checking in with the humanity part of it first before I dive into to other realms.
Sure. I guess my question is, do you feel that being a new human actually shows up in the way that you do all of those things too?
Yes.
Right? Like the way that you parent, the way that you're a partner, right? The way that you show up in your business. Do you feel that, I don't know, maybe the energy, the character, the quality of the way that you approach that? Those things?
That's beautifully said. Thank you for that question. Yeah, I wholeheartedly believe that. And it's kind of like checking in with all of those things and grounding with it mm-hmm. and understanding that the gift that I've been given to walk this life is fulfilled with the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of it just being the journey or the narrative of the journey being the most important part of it.
Mm-hmm. Something that I've really been working on or noticing in my own experience in the past several years, right, is just the, like, coming into flow with the internal nudges. Are you following
yes.
that concept? Yeah, it's like I believe and I feel very certainly that, like, I am here to move through this world, right? And maybe this sort of phrasing of it will relate to you or will resonate with you. But there's also, like, this sense of putting into motion certain energies, right? You know, I kind of think of ourselves too as like manifestation machines, right? It's not, people get really trapped in this concept of the positive thinking sort of approach to manifestation, right? But like, this is a physical reality. I am in this physical body. And so I believe that part of manifesting, part of creating, is actually like using this body to move around energy,
yeah.
right?
I guess you have to put in action mm-hmm. what you want to be manifested.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who can just, you know, ohm it out, right?
Uh-huh.
And get it, you know, just gifted from the sky.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, laughing at that.
Sure.
I wish that was me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You know, there's a degree of it that is, you know, the motions,
mm-hmm.
you know, putting in the work, doing the
right. And moving through the journey,
mm-hmm.
but as you're doing it with sort of that that awareness and the intentionality and just sort of that groundedness in the kind of person that I know that I am or that I want to be in this world, right? And like embodying your values.
Yeah, and I think you have a very graceful way of doing that. You definitely do it way better than me. I'm moving through this world, and I feel like I'm falling, and my knees are hurt. And, you
know, like, I got scrapes on my knees.
I got the boo-boo, you know? The universe just hit me everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But that's part of it.
That's part of it, yeah.
And I love it. It's okay if you don't really remember to check in with all of those parts or to be in a space of conscious awareness all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mangoes are great sometimes.
Mangoes?
You know, sitting. You ever seen the mango meme?
Oh,
the
guy? Mango. Tell me more about mangoes.
Oh my God, there's an interview with this, what seems to be a homeless man. I'm not sure if he's homeless.
Okay.
Or houseless, whatever you call it. But he's like, you don't know about the wind blowing. You don't think about the trees or you know, I'm paraphrasing here.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
And I think the best part of it, he's like, and a mango that reminds you that you are loved by somebody.
Mm. I do love mangoes. They do taste like love.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, that man, it seemed, I'm not sure if he did or he didn't, but it seemed like he had nothing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But everything.
Mm-hmm.
With the bite of a mango.
Yeah.
And he was able to taste the universe in it.
Mm.
And feel the grace of God or source or whatever you choose to call
it. Yeah. You know, I spent a lot of time contemplating this concept. I'm like, okay, how do I just be love? And, you know, I think I was reading a lot about like Bringers of the Dawn at the time, maybe, and some other stuff sort of in that realm. And so I was like, okay, well, we're going to be love by like holding the frequency. We're going to embody love. We're going to anchor this frequency here. And so I would literally practice doing this, right? And be like, okay, let's just get centered with love. We'll open our heart chakra as wide as we can. Just start beaming this energy out into the field around us, right? And I would even like, I straight up do this when I go grocery shopping. So I will be walking around the grocery store and I'll like look at that person. I'll be like, I love you. I hope you feel my love. Just like quietly in my mind, right? And I think that there's value to that, for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's also something that just feels like unactuated potential in that practice, right? Like it, I feel like I'm a seed, you know, and I don't know, like there just seems like there's more.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes. I don't know why it would feel incomplete, right? Love should cover I should check all the boxes, right? I mean, you would think. But the unwasted potential.
Unactuated
potential.
Unactualized.
Yeah, I mean, is it okay to be in both a place of love and in a place of whatever the opposite of that looks like?
Mm.
You know, can you say, you know, let me help you pick a ripe fruit here at the grocery store, or this tomato may be better, right, to the person next to you, and also cut them off at the line and say, got you, you know,
yeah.
You should have been faster.
Yeah. Let's change your tomato scenario a little bit. Like, what if the person next to you is trying to pick out a tomato and they turn to you and they say, hey, will you help me pick out a tomato? And you're just like, I'm just being love. And so you don't do shit. You don't respond to them. You don't help them. You're just like, I am embodying the frequency of love. are you being love in that moment?
Well, to the most important being, yourself, sure.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
One of the things that this concept of like just being love brings to me, and like the unsatisfyingness of that answer, it reminds me of this concept that we've seen sort of in the conscious relationship space, right? Which is this idea that love is not a feeling, it's an action, right? And I think that this applies to our relationships with other people and the planet, and I mean any living being, right? It's in the way that you show up for them that you are loving, right? It's not like the feeling by itself just isn't quite enough, you know? It doesn't get you there, you know? I mean, if you're, to take your family example, right? If your family is like, hey, where have you been? Like, we want to spend time with you. We want to see you. We want to like be a family with you. And you're like, I got all this love for you inside. But I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. You know? Like there's a sense in which you're not being loving to your family.
Yes.
Right? Let's come at it from a different angle. You know, I mean, I think you kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, right? It's like another one of these concepts that we see in sort of the bigger like spiritual conversation is this idea that we're spirits having a human experience, right? And oftentimes when you hear that phrase or that idea, the emphasis is on we're spirits, we're souls, we're spiritual beings. Right? And it makes sense because, you know, part of what's been going on and part of what we're needing to do is like raise consciousness, right? So we're going around to people and we're being like, hey, you are a spirit, right? But, you know, the fact of the matter is that sometimes this human experience can get a little ugly.
Oh, yeah. It can get messy.
It can get messy. It can get uncomfortable, traumatic, right?
The body remembers.
The body feels, and the body remembers, right? And it's like, it's in those moments, I feel like, you know, we're so tempted to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, I'm a spirit, right? All this discomfort, all this, like, ugliness, like, I don't need to deal with this. I'm just gonna like retreat into my spiritness, disassociate from my body, you know, and call it good. But like, and again, I think you raised this earlier, it's like, but what if we kind of put the emphasis on the other part, right? Like what if we think about it as I am a spirit having a human experience, and you know, the reason I'm here, or one of the big reasons I'm here is to have this human experience, right? And it's embodied, you know, and it's, I don't know. I mean, something that kind of comes to mind for me is like, I think we really take for granted all of the things that come along with having a body.
Yes. I mean, just to bring it back to the loving, mm-hmm. right? You can, you know, your family's, people you love are always going to want something from you.
Sure.
If you're loving them the right way, right?
They may want more if you're not.
But I think that the first relationship, the first love, the first, I would say, yeah, love bond that you should have is between your spirit and your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And know that it's working together.
Mm-hmm.
And it wants to be in union. Or you know, for lack of a better word. And if you can make that bond as balanced as possible, mm-hmm. I mean, the action of loving others doesn't become a something that you have to be conscious about. Mm. It just becomes, because you're in balance with yourself. Mm-hmm. So, in essence, people will always know that what you do for them, or what you do around them, or what you do because of them, it's always rooted in that balanced love experience. I mean, do you have any examples of something like that where you can relate to something like that?
I mean, I don't know if I would say examples necessarily, but I think you're hitting on something that's really fundamental, right? And what's coming to mind for me is, like, I've actually, I conceive of sort of what we're doing right now. And by we, I mean the collective. And by right now, I mean, shoot, at least since COVID, like very much doing this, is that we are healing our relationships with ourselves. We are healing our relationships with each other. And we are healing our relationship with the planet, right? And they're all connected. And, you know, to kind of go back to COVID, it was like we were all sent home to go on timeout. I mean, it's a little judgy, but to be on timeout with ourselves and to, like, really confront ourselves and really sort of say, what's working for me, what's not? You know, and it was so fascinating to sort of watch some of the collective sort of, like, migrations and movements, right? It was like 6 months into COVID, breakups, roommate changes. People were like, I can't fucking live with you anymore, you know? Then you had, like, people, like, switching jobs and just all this other stuff, people moving to other countries, right? It's just like, it was like people had been at home with themselves long enough that they just couldn't keep going with the stuff that wasn't real for them anymore, the stuff that wasn't working for them.
It feels like you talk about now, these challenging times.
Totally, yeah. Totally. And then sort of, it seemed like there was kind of this addition, like this new sort of chapter kind of after that, where it was like, let's talk about relationship. You know, let's talk about sacred union. Let's talk about what it is to, like, be in a conscious relationship, you know? And it seems like now, for, like, the past kind of year or so, it's like our relationship with the planet is really on display. But to your point, I think that these things are all interrelated and all reflections of each other, right? Because as you're saying, it's like you have to have a really just strong, loving connection with yourself and between your soul and your body in order to, like, cultivate that love within yourself to share, to open that heart chakra and share it with everyone else, right? And then that flows into your relationships with your spouse, your kids, your coworkers, et cetera, right? And I think, too, it's like, I think you can really tell, kind of to look at it the other way, it's like, I think you can really tell a lot about a person and their relationship with themselves by how they treat the world, by how they treat other people, you know?
That feels 100% accurate to me. Mm-hmm. The relationship between your inner is the same as your outer. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection, for sure. And to some degree, I feel like you have to be tapped into both parts of it, the yes, creation and the dismantling or destruction, in order to raise awareness of love and of the collective. You have to be able to relate to both the dark and the light, right? Mm. So, how do you tap into that which you're trying to stay away from, right? Like, how do you say, you know, I want these new relationships to form. I want this new era of humanity to evolve into this beautiful space without being able to hold the hand of the person who needs to understand what it looks like.
Wow, that's a deep question. I mean, the first thing that came up for me in response to that is like, you know, in my own journey, right? And I'll ground this in relationship because that was kind of what came up. In my own journey, you know, I mean, you know, but we fall into certain patterns, mm-hmm. right? And how do I want to say this? It's like I found myself most recently like repeating a pattern, you know, and I've been doing enough work that I know that that's a reflection of me. Right. And so when I realized that here we are again, it's like, okay, we're going to call stop because I've been here before and I do not like this. Right. We're ending this now. And then it's on me to sort of do that internal work. Right. To figure out what it is about the situation that is so attractive to me, or why it is that I keep saying yes to this might be a better way to put that, right? And, you know, then we like stir it up a little bit and wait and, you know, see kind of like what is presented next, right? Does it smell the same? Do we say yes, you know, or are we gonna like take a sidestep and try something else, right? Yeah, and I feel like that's why so many people end up kind of doing the same thing, is because they don't take that responsibility to say, I'm making this happen. I'm taking part in making this happen. I am saying yes to this, right? It's just kind of like, so often people will jump from one thing to another without sort of connecting all the dots and taking responsibility for their part, right? And I think to kind of circle back to the project of New Earth, it's the same thing, right? It's taking that moment to say, okay, how have I been contributing to this? And really taking ownership of it. You know, how am I plugged in to the old paradigm? And how am I continuing to like help perpetuate that into the future? And how instead can I take that different step forward rather than just continuing on in that same pattern, you know?
Yes, I feel like I feel like I have so many plugs. It's just insane.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to have a friend like you that can see it, because often I can't. Mm-hmm. But there are some patterns that I know I recognize and I choose to stay with as a human choice. Mm. And So I think that there's a really nice balance in which you play, where you're aware and you're accountable for those ripples you put out in the world, mm-hmm. and you learn to live with the ones that you want to keep and change the ones that you definitely need to change, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that, I guess my question is, what does that look like for a new human? How would you describe it? Yeah, I'm curious to to dive into that and see, you know, where I can use that and be, you know, use it as a traction point.
Yeah.
To propel myself forward.
Well, that's literally what this podcast is about. As a busy DJ with another project or adventure always on the horizon, Spotify was my go-to for music discovery. But about a year ago, I noticed that I wasn't feeling inspired by music anymore. In fact, everything I was hearing felt like lame elevator music. Nondescript, unimposing, uninspired, and uninspiring. I wasn't coming across tracks I wanted to play, and frankly, I was starting to wonder if the go-go-go pressure of today's music industry had finally just sucked the soul out of music. Because that's what I'm looking for when I'm searching for tracks. Soul. So I did a little digging, and what I learned led me to quit Spotify. In addition to running recruitment ads for ICE last year, I learned that Spotify co-founder and then CEO, now executive chairman, Daniel Ek, invested $700 million in a German AI weapons technology startup named Helsing, where he is now chairman of the board. Mr. Ek's personal fortune is estimated at around $9.6 billion. And in the 20 years since its inception, Spotify has grown to be a $137 billion company. Meanwhile, Spotify only pays musicians roughly one-third to one-half of a penny per stream. You do the math. Spotify is extracting massive amounts of wealth generated off the talents of musicians and other creatives all over the world. And its co-founder is using that extracted wealth to support AI-powered violence. No, thank you. Many artists have already removed their catalogs from the platform. And Spotify has been leaning in to AI-generated music and buying the rights to stock music to fill up its playlists, further limiting real artists' opportunity to make money from their art. No wonder I haven't been finding any tracks with soul there. So if you still have a Spotify subscription, this is your invitation to change that. Let's make companies that take advantage of artists so their leaders can support more violence a thing of the past. There are so many alternatives out there. There's Bandcamp, SoundCloud, Deezer, KoBuzz, physical media, and even your local library. Personally, I ended up on Tidal for my day-to-day listening. They pay artists more, the sound quality is better, and they made it so easy to transfer my playlists, like tracks, and albums over from Spotify. And I miss sharing tracks and playlists with people. So if you cancel your Spotify subscription and switch over to Tidal, take a screenshot of your cancellation confirmation and send it over to me at queenie@newhumansfornewearth.com. And I'll send you my Medicine House playlist, which is a selection of some of my favorite tracks. Let's support artists so they can create more art with soul. Now, let's get back into the episode. One of the things I asked folks to do in the last episode was to just bring some more awareness to all of the ways that plastic shows up in their lives. Mm. Because one of the things I shared is that 99% of plastics are actually manufactured from fossil fuels.
Oh my goodness. I'm sorry, but I remember she gave me my first recycling. Oh my goodness. I can't believe we're circling back to that. Uh-huh. That was such like an epiphany moment. As a tattoo artist, I go through so much paper, mm-hmm. and so much plastic. And I mean, wow, thank you for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, I just had to just say that out loud.
You're welcome.
So, yes, being aware.
Yeah, just being aware. And you know, the sort of larger context, the larger of that, right, is that like, what that means is that all of the plastic in your life, and it is abundant, right, that's all supporting the oil and gas industry, which is exactly what's leading to the illegal military action in Venezuela and is leading to these threats to annex Greenland, right? Like there is this ripple effect to this thing that feels so mundane in our lives, you know? And, you know, just to kind of share, it's like one of the things that I've been doing since I like took on this mission of becoming a more conscious inhabitant of Earth is going through my life and saying, this piece of plastic, like, was this necessary? Did I have to like bring this into my reality and into this reality? Because, you know, the other side of it, right? Like, shoot, put aside all the fossil fuel and military stuff, right? But the other side of it is that, as far as we know, plastic can take up to like 400, 500 years to break down. And when it does, it breaks down into microplastics. So, you know, the EPA actually estimates that every single piece of plastic that has ever been manufactured still exists somewhere.
Wow.
Yes, and will continue to exist for hundreds of years after you are dead. Right? So I don't know, you get your cup of coffee, mm-hmm. right? It comes with that little plastic cup top. And you do that every day because, of course, because you're treating yourself, because, you know, we live in a society where we have that, like, level of that quality of life where you can go to and get yourself coffee, right? But that little piece of, that little plastic lid, that's going to be around in the landfill for however long. And if you don't go and get yourself coffee every single day, that's 365 little plastic lids, right? And if you think about all of the other people on this planet who were also doing that.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's insane.
That's just, I'm thinking about every single piece of plastic lid that I go through in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And having, you know, I have children and the plastic that they go through.
Yes. Yes.
Because they want their fast food chain energy drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And it's like the question that I've been facing that I hope you all will face too, right? Is, okay, where can I cut some of this out? Where can I take responsibility for my part in creating this situation, right? Both in supporting this violence and ugliness over here, and also in creating this pile of this enormous pile of garbage that is polluting our environment and ourselves.
I mean, personally, I can start with acknowledging that I have so many containers, like reusable containers that really aren't reusable. They're made to break. Mm. They're so easy to have access to that I'm sure I'm not the only one who has just ignored probably the pileup of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I've started treating myself to weekly massages recently just because I carry a lot of stress on my back, right? I'm trying to save the whole world or whatever. But, you know, after my massage, the lady tries to hand me a bottle of water. And every single time I say, I'm good. I have water. I don't need your plastic bottle of water. And she looks at me puzzled because she doesn't have that mindfulness, right? That greater context of what this bottle of water actually means, you know? Or shoot, like you get takeout. I mean, you mentioned this takeout, right? It's like during COVID, it was all you could do, right? And our garbage started like piling up with all these takeout containers, you know? And the thing that broke my heart about that moment was that it's so normalized for us. This is how you get food. It comes wrapped in all this plastic that's going to get used once. and then you were going to throw it away because you know what? That plastic is not recyclable in your curbside recycling.
Well, I don't know about you, but from now on, I'm going to go with my own container.
Do it.
I might be like one of the people in my circles to start that.
Do it. I fucking love it. Yeah.
And if you take your own container, I mean, it stays fresher. Mm-hmm. You can save it better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I've straight up, people look at me like I'm so weird when I do this, but I have actually taken my container, right? You go to your food cart, you get your food, you sit down, you eat your food. I take the container home with me to like put into my various like recycling like management
oh, so
streams.
You eat your food, then you're like, oh yeah, the container, that's gonna.
I know. I might as well go with my own plate. I mean, like.
That's what I'm gonna start doing. I'm gonna get myself a container. I mean, I'm sure Pods would appreciate that.
You would think so. I mean, one of the things I want to do is talk to someone who's involved with a food cart pod and like get into it. Because here's why.
I wonder if they would offer a very small discount for people who bring their own containers.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that needs to be something that just gets pushed.
Yeah. I had an experience where I went to a brand new food cart pod. Mm-hmm. And this food cart pod had been designed, or like, it was an old restaurant that had been retrofitted, right? So they had all of the restaurant infrastructure there to start with. I go, pick out my food, I look around. Everyone's food comes in these, again, non-recyclable plastic containers. Very heavy duty. My food comes out in them too. And afterwards, I left a review. It's like, great location, love the ambiance, great pod choices or cart choices. Except for the unrecyclable takeaway containers. Like, can you guys be better about this? Come on. And the management, not of the individual carts, but the management of the whole pod wrote back and they said, that's not up to us. That's up to each individual cart to make the choice of what containers they use. And I'm like, that right there is a perfect example of abdicating responsibility and refusing to take, like, to have accountability. Because those people made the choice to not have a dishwashing facility for folks. They could have very easily have done that. They made the choice not to require that people use compostable or easily recyclable containers. And then when they got called on it, it's not mine. You know, we have to be done with that kind of reaction. You know.
Which one was it? Let's put them on.
Let's put them on blast, folks. So you call your tattoo business Shamanic Ink.
Yes.
Can you talk with us about sort of the core concept of shamanic healing practice and maybe compare it to like the Western healing tradition?
Well, shamanism versus Western healing?
Yeah, or medicine.
Medicine. Wow. Well, my understanding of what is the definition? Mm-hmm. My understanding of the definition of shamanism is a teacher, someone mm-hmm. who can help guide you from one point of your experience to another point of your experience, mm-hmm. which is completely unrelated to medicine. Mm-hmm. As far as healing topics go. What I can say is that most Western medicine comes from traditional shamanic areas where people practice more shamanism than most parts of the world. So, for instance, if you're looking for heart medication, most heart medication comes from snake venom. Hmm. And they regulate, you know, the whoever does these medicines regulates how much venom to put or however that compound works in your body. And at low doses of the venom, you can regulate your heart rhythms. The difference between shamanic practices of healing and Western practices of healing is that in shamanic practices, no matter how much of the medicine you take, there is little to no risk of you dying or any fatal incidences. In Western medicine, if you take a little over what you're prescribed, you might want to call one of those big red boxes to come pick you up with sirens on, you know?
Yeah. But you don't always use a form of medicine and shamanic practices, right? I mean, one of the things I recall you saying is that, you know, there's this emphasis on like moving energy, right? And, you know, I mean, for folks who are sort of unfamiliar with, I mean, everyone talks about ayahuasca anymore, right? But, you know, one of the critical parts of the purge, right, is that somewhere in your body, there is some stuck energy.
Yes.
Right? And the effect of the purge is to expel that energy out of your system.
Yes.
And, you know, sort of the understanding of why that's helpful, right, is that that stuck energy was limiting you in some way, right? It's manifesting in some sort of dysfunction in your life, or, you know, it can even be like distorting your perception of reality, right? In such a way that you kind of have this like systematic, illness in a sense, that's preventing you from being your highest, truest, most authentic self, right? So from my perspective, it's like the core of shamanic healing practice is like, let's get to the root of what's causing your sickness, of what's causing your distress or your dysfunction or whatever, right? There is an ultimate cause of that, and let's get to that. Whereas in Western medicine, it seems to me, you know, the focus is more on like, let's medicate your symptoms. You have a cold, well, let's give you something to help you stop coughing. You know, you're sneezing a bunch, well, maybe you have allergies, let's get you to stop sneezing. You know, and that's not to say that there's not benefits and wisdom to that, right? But, you know, in a certain sense, with Western medicine, it's like, it's not actually removing the sickness, right? Like, you are still ill. It's just that, you know, your experience of the symptoms has been dulled. And so maybe you're not feeling it quite so actively, right? But like, nonetheless, you're still sick, right? Does that kind of jive with?
Yeah. I mean, just to keep it light, it's like coffee versus tea. One masks that you're tired. One actually gives you a little bit more life force. Mm. So I think that's what, is that what you're talking about here?
Sure.
Yeah, when it comes to shamanic practices and Western medicine, I mean, you're absolutely right. One targets the body symptoms, while shamanic practices target the root, for sure. But the root, for a lot of people that are probably viewing this, might seem to be like the root cause of whatever the symptom is. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, you're talking about from the moment that you're born mm-hmm. on and beyond. But shamanic practices travel, allows you or helps you travel beyond your birth, into your spirit body, mm-hmm. into those realms where energy is actually tangible, where you can use or tweak little experiences to help guide not only this experience, but the following ones. So, yeah, I would say Western medicine and shamanic practice are so far apart from each other. It's like, you know, watching a child say their first word and watching that same child, you know, complete a NASCAR race. it's completely, you know, uh-huh. they're two different, completely different worlds.
Yeah. 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 I had an experience. I'm just laughing because, like, this is, like, episode two, and I was like, let's talk about shamanism. and now I'm, like, going to share a little bit about, like, an experience I had in a ayahuasca ceremony, but, you know, we're just getting to know each other real quick. but I had this experience, in an ayahuasca ceremony, maybe like a month and a half after my divorce. And you know, that divorce was like such a portal for me. I know you've sort of seen me through that whole transition, and, there was a moment during the ceremony where I felt this like invisible hand like reach into my mouth and like reach down past my stomach, down, like all the way down to like the very depths of my being, you know, and it grabbed onto something. And then I heard the medicine say to me, it was like, well, Queenie, you ready to step into a whole new reality? And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, count me in.
You have to give her permission.
Yeah, totally. And two, I mean, permission, totally. Consent. Yes. And I felt like it was also just sort of like prepping me too for like this is what this is, right? And I was like, yeah, count me in. And I was like, okay. And it like, boop, popped it out and just tossed it aside, you know? And like the relief, the release of that, you know? I mean, it's, if you're not familiar with sort of this type of healing modality, I mean, that just sounds crazy, right? But like, there is no question in my mind that like I stepped into a whole other sort of way of like approaching my life, a whole other presence, you know? And for sure, like it wasn't one and done, right? Like these things take time to integrate and to sort of unfold, right? But there was nonetheless still that almost immediate sense of relief. That I think anyone who's sat with the medicine or any sort of sacred medicine can relate to, you know?
Yeah, I think that the level of healing that you can achieve on any type of vibrational medicine is just beyond science and the understanding of what most people know of medicine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can only hope that the masses understand that at least once in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's exactly why I bring it up, right? Is because I think that this moment is a moment to do some of that healing work. Right. I mean, as you sort of mentioned earlier, and as we were talking about earlier, it's like we are all plugged into this system, to this old paradigm that isn't serving us, right? In a sense, there's like we've been suffering from this cultural illness, right? And I think large portions of the population have been aware of it, maybe not consciously, but there's just sort of this like something isn't right sense, right? There's this sense of like, you know, love is the most powerful force, it is the creative force, and yet somehow we still seem to be run by people and organizations and corporations that don't embody that, right? And these efforts to try to help it prevail. And look, we live in a dual world, right? So it will always be a bit of a give and take, right? Like, I get that. But it seems like those efforts just keep failing. And I think that this moment is different, right? That we actually have an opportunity to finally root out some of the sources of this like deep cultural illness that we've been suffering from. You know, and I think that this is the work of the new human, right? It's opting out of supporting the new paradigm. It's taking responsibility for finding all of the ways that we're participating in it and saying, I'm done with that. Because I see what this game is and I am done playing it. You know, even if it means being uncomfortable, even if it means adjusting how it is that I move through this world.
You know, these topics can be so complex, you know, because having these conversations just is a perspective which assumes that most people are unsatisfied, which is truth, right? Most people are unsatisfied. And one of the biggest targets is always leadership, because leadership should be, you know, helping promote happiness and for the collective. But, you know, how just like we were talking about in the beginning, right? How are we accountable? How do we keep ourselves accountable for our own happiness, right? How do we make the communities that we want? How do we break down the system? And I can't remember where I saw it or who told me this concept, but they imagined a pyramid made out of sugar. And they put a little bit of water at the bottom of the pyramid, and it was one grain at a time from the bottom that made the change. You never change it from the top. It will never break down. But a small change at the bottom creates a ripple effect that makes the pyramid completely fall apart. So how do you see yourself making a community, and what are the things that actually make you happy? Because happiness is kind of like a never-ending story. In a lot of ways, happiness is something that you achieve, it lives for a while, and then there's a natural swing where it is not natural to be happy all of your life.
100%.
You have to go through the stages of grief. You have to have loss. You have to have pain. You have to acknowledge all of these feelings in your body. And the more you can live with them, the more you can sit with them, the more you can identify with them, the happier you become almost instantly.
I mean, I fully agree with you. You have to embrace the fullness of the experience, right? You know, and I think large segments or even I think the cultural push is to say, no, you can actually just have the happiness. You can have just the pleasure. You can have just the aliveness or whatever though I'm not sure that most people who actually live that way feel alive in that real, tangible, palpable sense, right?
Most people think that happiness is success and power. Mm-hmm. And pleasures, mm-hmm. Limited pleasures. But when you live that way, I mean, everyone knows about the guy who's mad that the yacht is too small. everybody's seen those mm-hmm. those videos or been part of a community where it's like, this isn't enough of a birthday for me. I need it bigger.
Totally.
Oh
gosh, the birthday thing. Yeah.
It's a never ending, never satisfying thirst for what's the next pick me up of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's never gonna be enough.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from, a linear perspective.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, the lesson there is that no one else will ever be able to fill the emptiness inside, right? Like, you have to do that work. And that work feels obscure to most people because we've been disconnected from our connection with spirit.
Right, and bringing it back to where a leadership plays a role in that. Mm-hmm. Leadership plays no role. I don't believe leadership plays any role, because if we make the decision as a collective mm-hmm. to make these choices for ourselves, mm-hmm. then leadership has no power.
Well, and I think to your point, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because the historic thing that we have done, government needs to regulate. Corporations need to do it differently. They need to take responsibility. They need to clean it up. But the reality is that they have no incentive to do so, right? I mean, this is your pyramid thing is perfect, right? Because established power has no incentive to give up that position, right? It has no incentive. The thing too, I mean, it fits so nicely, right? The thing that I think we need to talk about more of is, like, corporations actually are not allowed to consider anything other than the maximization of profits to their shareholders.
Well, that's talking about the never-ending happiness. You got
yes.
another carrot.
Yes.
It's a bigger carrot and a bigger carrot. It's a never-ending game.
Yes. And you and on top of that, even if all of the people in the corporation agreed that, less profit in exchange for more environmentally friendly whatever, or more people-friendly practices, right? If they're like, oh gosh, we didn't realize we were polluting this whole town full of these people and causing all of these cancers. Sorry, let's fix it. Even if that were the case, if going ahead and remediating that or stopping whatever practice it was that was causing that, if that causes $1 in decline of revenue shareholder revenue, they literally are not allowed to do it because it would be a breach of their duty to the corporation. What I think is really special about this moment is that it's so obvious now. And it's so obvious the disparities that have been created as a result of this system. And not just the disparities, but also the inhumane behavior that the billionaires and the corporations are willing to go to in order to maintain that position.
Well, here's the thing. There is, if you look at it as a game, mm-hmm. right? Most people only know this board. Mm-hmm. So even if something shifts, the majority of people will want to stay on the board to be relevant. If there's no other board game that they know how to play, if there's no other reality for them to shift into,
What I think is so interesting about that is I actually had a friend who was not spiritual, mm-hmm. right? And we were talking about this, and she says, you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I've been noticing that I've been, like, shopping for bamboo, like, silverware or, like, forks, you know, instead of plastic ones. Like, and I don't even know where that came from. But, like, I've just noticed that I've been doing this. And I'm like, yeah, girl, lean in. We need more of that. You know, and I have some theories about where that's coming from, but, like, I think that that kind of thing is happening for the collective now.
Oh, definitely. Even, like, I was, I have an eye exam coming up, and my first thought is get the bamboo glasses.
Yeah.
So, next.
Yeah. I actually went to the optometrist, I don't know, 4 months ago, and one of the things I did was rather than having daily contacts, which is what I had been using for years, I switched into using twice weekly or 2 week contact lenses instead. So I've cut down my contact lens trash production by 14 times. A factor of 14, I guess, is the way you'd say that.
I mean, everywhere you can do it.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Taking an inventory, being responsible, being accountable, holding yourself accountable, and helping other people see where they can be accountable for their own things, mm-hmm. in ways where they can manage it properly.
Yeah.
You know, without the shame, without the nasty stuff, you know, we can all do it.
Yeah.
It's simple.
And it's a process too, mm-hmm. right? Like, no one I think is expecting to say, like, well, now, like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to throw everything out and I'm, you know, no, it's a process. It mm-hmm. takes time. I mean, you know, I've been really zeroed in and focused on this for a little over a year now. And, like, I'm still making changes, you know, to the kinds of things that I'm buying, to what I'm not buying anymore, you know. And, you know, I think it's just important to know yourself enough to kind of go back to the theme that you brought up, to know, like, which of these options can I just do now? What is easy for me to do in a way that's not going to cause me undue suffering, right? Like if you're someone who's just really, really into your skincare routine and you're, like, looking at your skincare products and you're like, shit, they're all in plastic bottles, you know, maybe you don't start there. That's okay. There's other stuff, you know, but, like, find the other stuff, find the low hanging fruit, grab that low hanging mango.
Yeah.
You know, taste that love of God.
Yes, yeah. That's, I mean, I feel like that's wholeheartedly a great first step.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anybody can do it.
Anyone can do it. And I think that we need to. I think, like, to go back to the pyramid example, right? It's like, well, leadership isn't going to do it, but maybe that's actually exactly what we need. Right? Because, you know, okay, so more and more of us are, like, waking up right now. And part of that process is also that coming to be sovereign. And what does a sovereign person do? Do they look to leadership to tell them how they're going to, like, move through this world? Do they look to leadership to say, tell me how to be a good human? No. They do that for themselves. You know, and, like, again, to sort of go back to this, like, connection with spirit, it's like, yeah, that's informed by your connection with spirit. And if you're atheist, I mean, this is a non-denominational podcast. So, like, if that's not part of your worldview, I mean, replace it with whatever sort of moral code feels right to you.
Intuition, right? Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think this moment is about this, again, coming to be sovereign. Coming to realize that this world belongs to all of us, you know, and these billionaires and these corporations who think that they just get to come in and do whatever they want, regardless of how it impacts the rest of us or future generations or other living things, the oceans.
Yeah, we control what we buy and we control what we sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not out there pushing the grocery carts or at the checkout lines.
Exactly. Exactly. We make billionaires. Right? And they don't want us to remember that.
I mean, what would happen if you know, that small change happens tomorrow? Just a small one. Mm-hmm. 1%. Can you imagine what 1% of what the billionaires have comes back to our pockets,
yeah,
to our countries, to help nourish our future?
Mm-hmm.
Just 1%.
Well, what came to me when you said that was like, okay, so we know what 1% of the population can do to this planet. What about 1% of all of the collective's effort in the opposite direction? Could you imagine? Whew!
Yeah, that just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Like, okay. For real.
Tidal wave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great thought. And I think, I mean, it's unimaginable. But it starts out, you know, it starts with information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful that you're providing it for all of us.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being the person to introduce me to recycling.
My pleasure. Okay, so we've been talking about how this moment is one where more and more people are, like, waking up, you know, and that moment can be kind of shocking, especially if, you know, you haven't intentionally gone into some sort of, you know, healing experience or, you know, sort of intentionally sat down to do that, right? If it just kind of happens to you and then you're like, oh shit, like, what have I been doing? Where am I? What is this place? You know, I mean, I think an experience that a lot of people can sort of resonate with right now is like looking around at this world we've created and being like, what are we doing? You know, what is this world we've created? And so for me, it seems like one of the things that's really coming to the surface, and maybe folks just don't have this terminology, right? But like this moment seems like a moment where integration is needed, mm, right? Like, can you maybe talk to us about what integration is and sort of like what it looks like? What is it to integrate sort of an experience like this?
Integration to me feels like, I mean, it's different for everybody.
Sure.
But taking the time to truly reflect on the awareness of what's happening or happened to you, and the relationship between that moment or your experience and the decisions you make moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and that integration is used in so many ways, and you can mistake it for a lot of different variations of what that might look like, but for the shamanic journey specifically, it's really making sure you take the time,
mm-hmm,
to sit with what your truth is and allow it the proper, what's the right word? Grace yourself with honoring the time it takes to fully register your whole experience. And it doesn't have to be just a medicine experience, right? It can be something that happened to you in the parking lot,
mm,
you know, to sit with, wow, this just happened. You know, what was this? Why did this happen to me? What was my contributing factors? And how can I use this in my life in a way that helps nourish everything around me?
Mm. Yeah, I love this concept of nourishment. It feels like something that we could really use more of in general, right? Mm. You know, one of the ways I describe the old paradigm is, you know, that it's like constructed on the principles of violence, extraction, and division. Mm. You know, so it's like actually anti-nourishing. It's essentially like energy vampires just on like a collective level, right?
We all know those.
We all know what that, yeah. But I love your description of integration, and you know, I think it's, for me, it's like, now that I have this awareness, now that I'm awake and I'm looking around this world with sort of this new lens, this new perspective, it's like, how do I sort of lean into being a person that has this awareness now and this perspective, right? Like, I think you sort of captured this really nicely. It's like, how does that inform how I move through the world and the choices that I'm making? You know, like, where are patterns, right? We were talking about sort of relational patterns earlier. And I think too, there's this real opportunity to sort of sit with yourself and say, okay, like, I see that I've been doing X, Y, and Z, you know, and I'm also seeing now that X, Y, and Z aren't serving me, you know, and I see that this is a moment where I can say, okay, like, okay, past self, like, I love you. And there was totally a reason why that was the thing that you were doing. But like, I am now moving on from this and finding other ways that actually serve me to going forward. And I think to connect it again to sort of this moment, it's like, let's come to grips with all the ways that we are plugged in. All the ways that maybe we like being plugged in and don't really want to not be, you know?
Yeah.
And just really be honest with ourselves and sort of say, okay, but like, I know now, I know with clarity from this last year that I cannot keep doing this. And now how do I move forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's that right there is the definition of integration. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get more beautiful than knowing yourself and knowing what's in your best and highest interest and to make informed choices for yourself. Mm-hmm. And give yourself the grace to find love in those moments for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to bring it back to one of my ayahuasca ceremonies for a second. you know, I had one where, you know, the medicine was showing me, I mean, honestly, what I was hearing was the earth crying and asking for help, really. But the message from the medicine in that moment was, look, there are, nothing is on accident. And there are gifts in everything. And so, you know, we'll make peace with the past. We'll thank it for the gifts. But we need to move forward.
And that is, I mean, if you can just live by those words, if everyone could just live by those words, I mean, I would love to have a bumper sticker on that. If you're going to sell merch.
Uh-huh. Tell me.
That's going to be the first.
Not yes. The healing ourselves and the relationships with ourselves.
Oh my God, all of it, but that one?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just beautifully said.
Mm. Yeah, we'll take the medicine. Yeah. Well, not to put you on the spot, but how's my tattoo design coming?
Oh, wow. Yeah. actually, I haven't gotten to it.
Ah.
But you know how I work. I love to do it with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, come to the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, I prefer it this way. I don't know how other artists do it where they're like drawing something and do you like this? You know, oh no, let me draw something else. Do you like this? Mm-hmm. No, you know, come in, let's sit together, have some tea. We collaborate on the piece, we'll draw it together. You give me real time information on what you like, what you don't like, and we'll design something beautiful together.
Okay. That's actually how I want to do it too. You know, I love being involved in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to do it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Well, how do people like get in contact with you for appointments?
Oh, Shamanic Ink PDX is a great way on Instagram. The .com, shamanicink.com. Yeah.
Perfect.
There's a contact form you can just fill out and you can write to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For everyone listening at home, Gabe is the most talented tattoo artist I've ever come across. Just like the range of styles that you're able to do. And I think too, there's something about the substance of the work that you do that I just haven't really come across in other artists.
Mm, so, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I really enjoy every single person that I've had the pleasure of working with. I'm definitely grateful of the vast conversations that has come through there. Seeds, so many seeds. It feels like a farm of seeds.
We seed collecting over here, people.
It's been wild. It's been a beautiful journey, and I absolutely love it. It's mm-hmm. part of my path for sure.
Love that. Okay, so that was Shamanic Ink PDX on Instagram.
Yes.
And shamanicink.com. Yeah.
Yes, perfect.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the New Humans for New Earth podcast. My name is Queenie. If you found this episode to be inspirational, helpful, or informative, please share it with your friends, your partner, a family member, or anyone that you love. If you loved this episode, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe wherever you are listening to this podcast. This is how we grow the New Humans community and help inspire others to join us in co-creating New Earth. This world is what we make it. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you in the next episode.